back to this. Again, if you take anything from what we talk about tonight, I want you to take this. If you really talk about decolonization, which is the return of indigenous land and lifeway, then there is an obligation and a responsibility to begin to participate in returning resources back to the indigenous, grassroots, indigenous nations that need it, and people of color who have also been disenfranchised and dispossessed of wealth and privilege in this system.
Can it be done in 10 years?
No.
Can I just give like one random example? I mean, do you know you can call public schools and say, what kid here has a balance for their school lunch? And you can donate money for a kid to have lunch. I mean, these are like simple little things that people can do.
Can they give you a kid's name?
I don't think they give you the name, but they just kind of tell you this is the person.
Can I donate?
Yeah. I mean, you can look up on the internet. But this is like, I mean, you can send money to a reservation. You can commit to sending a certain amount of money per month to a reservation to help them build something. I mean, going to the traditional grassroots people, of course, trying to find the traditional grassroots people. I mean, there's like, you can be creative about it. You don't have to give up your house like tomorrow, but there's ways of doing it by just thinking about what Anna said. Like, the resources just have to start going the other way. Like, no matter how small or whatever, like, we just have to start that movement in the other direction somehow, you know? So.
Yeah. One of the things you've been talking to us about, Anna, is that there is, you know, and we see this in all colonial governments everywhere. They go in and they find a strata of the society, the people they want to oppress, and they assign them to be the rulers, and then they get to line their pockets with the money that's coming in. So are there resources to help people understand how to get that help that's needed and the support and the money to the people who are actually needing it and not end up lining the pockets and disappearing into some corrupt structure that's supported by the BIA and the United States government? Like, how do we, who are outsiders, discern what's the right thing to do, or are we just strengthening the people who are misleading?
Did everyone get one of these?
No.
No.
I
want
to do a little introduction into Indian country. And trust me, at one time, I was as clueless as any of you. But I've learned. In a big way about Indian country, because now I'm right in the middle of it. This is actually a very simplified little table. But I just want to touch on a few things. You see at the top, this indigenous nation. These are the traditional grassroots people. These are the people that have language and culture and are willing to fight, usually in very militant ways, to preserve what they have. They are unwilling to adopt Eurocentric concepts to get ahead. Today, while I was trying to get ready for all this, we've been working with the Blackfeet people, the Blackfeet Nation in Montana. And we had a big set of phone calls. We had an elder from Pine Ridge, Boyd Hand, who was part of the Treaty Council. We were all talking with the Blackfeet Nation, trying to create some decolonization within their nation itself. And this dynamic that we're going to talk about right here is very present. These traditional people, the U.S. government was like, man, these people are the resistors. And we have done everything we can to get rid of them. We murdered them, we put them on concentration camps, we took their kids, we sterilized their women, we did forced penetration and took their babies. You name it. And in 1934, the IRA, the Indian Organization Act, was passed. And the U.S. government said, hey, we're going to impose our form of government on top of your matriarchal systems of government and your traditional institutions. gonna F you up and try to assimilate you. That formed the IRA system. That created the BIA tribal governments. If you ever hear Oglala Sioux Tribe, Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, the Navajo Tribe, or whatever, these are BIA IRA governments. They are not traditional governments.
I'm sorry, what does IRA stand for?
Bureau
of Indian Affairs, and what's IRA?
Indian Reorganization Act, the Pack-Wheeler Act of 1934.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I look at this and I see up here a rifle on the top line. This is not a traditional thing, you know. I feel like I understand resistance.
Uh-huh.
And
now can I do this one
now? This. I don't uh-huh. think that all resistance movements have been or are going to be pacifist, but I see a rifle there,
uh-huh.
and I feel like that is clearly a tool of colonization. I mean, I know very little, I realize, but I, and maybe this is the example of bringing up one example, but just what's in my consciousness is the Lenape people were not given rifles,
uh-huh.
and other tribes who were, in the course of the colonization, largely by white people, they were also being colonized by other tribes because they were not armed and others were. But those arms all came from white people.
Uh-huh.
So I just, you know, I see that and it does trigger something in me, and I don't think it's an anti-indigenous sentiment that it triggers. I think it's seeing something that has been imposed on indigenous people and other people, a kind of violence.
Okay. Would you feel better if it was a spear?
Yes.
You would? Okay.
Yeah. Bow and arrow?
What about a war club?
I would feel better. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that is the kind of destruction that we impose as white people.
Thanks for sharing that.
And Nama said yes. I can work
I want to get into it
because I want to finish recording this.
There is a little segue here.
After
I'm
leave it,
take
like 10
minutes. How many of you are pacifists? How many of you are into peace?
Can you,
it's
you
a
bring this
to or anti-militarist.
Anti-militarist
is
not
pacifist.
That's all right. I'm not
an absolute pacifist.
Maybe
I'm not a pacifist.
We don't have split hairs. Just
95%
pacifist.
How about that?
Who is or is not?
Is.
Oh, okay.
How many of you are peace people?
Peace people, yeah.
I want to be.
Okay. I'm going to give you a hard understanding.
Right.
And you can disagree with me, that's fine. I don't care.
Am I what?
You don't know peace. Because there's never been peace.
No problem agreeing with that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Okay. Now, I'm not saying that that's a value of yours. I totally understand. That is not a value of everyone's. But it creates some unhealthy dynamics in Indian country, which is actually on here. So we have the... Okay, so we have the traditional grassroots nations on the top. Then down here in the middle, we have indigenous people more open to adopting Eurocentric ways of doing things. And the indigenous quasi-sovereignty of the tribal government. Because tribal governments are not sovereign. It doesn't matter how many times the U.S. says, oh, they're sovereign governments. Tribal governments are government programs. They are funded by the federal government. If the tribal government tries to do something that the federal government doesn't like, the federal government takes the money away and penalizes them. Tribal governments are government programs. They're like mini corporations. They are not indigenous governments. They're not indigenous institutions. They are American institutions.
Can I inject one thing real fast? Do, do people remember the Jewish councils during World War II?
Yeah.
I think it's...
That was our tribal government.
Yeah, it's kind of similar, it's kind of similar to that.
We've been talking about that,
I mean, that's my understanding. It's like something...
Hey, why don't you draw this one now?
No.
I'm reading a really interesting book about that. It goes through the first years of persecution. That's the first book. And the next book is the years of extermination. I'll send you a
letter. All right, let's get happy about this.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Do the reservations have traditional government also? Or then it's
a different story? Some do, and some have something like that. Some have treaty governments or treaty councils that are trying to act as traditional governments. Others do not. For instance, right now, the Blackfeet Nation that we're working with does not have a traditional form of government. So let's look at this. So you've got grassroots people in the middle. And all the money comes here. All the dollars, everything comes to these tribal governments. But it's often not passed down to the grassroots people because in the 1950s, there was the Urban Relocation Act. And the United States was like, hey, we're going to pay you to get off the rez. Because, man, the rez is hard. So come out into to American civilization, and you can assimilate and get jobs, and it's going to be great for your families. Except when they did, white people are like, you effing savage. And they treated them poorly, and many of these were mixed blood people. They were not full bloods, they were mixed bloods who went out in white society trying to find an avenue to get ahead. And instead, white supremacy tore them apart. And then they're like, man, we gotta get back. So they went back to the Reds. But then they had all that oppression that white society gave them. Then we get back to the Reds. Hey, you savage, you blanket ass. They began to do the same oppression on the traditional full-blooded grassroots people as white America did to them. Because they had lost their language and their way of life and their identity. And they saw the traditional full-blood people as the savages and the people that should be getting with the program. And so not only was the federal dollars coming into the tribal governments, which were now being taken over by a lot of mixed-blood people, because they understood white America. And what is the one truism about white government?
Money.
Money and corruption. And they realized, man, there's millions of dollars coming into these tribal governments with no oversight. With no oversight. So we're going to take it. So then, now, not only are the traditional institutions of the grassroots people being overrun by this IRA system, but now this IRA system has gone completely corrupt. And these people are getting discriminated against in housing, in food, in healthcare, you name it. And if they try to fight, they get thrown in jail. They get blacklisted from necessary services. They get their houses taken away. Our brother, during the 2011 elder takeover of the Porcupine Early Mills building, because of this stuff, because they were feeding elders food with bugs and mouse shit in it. They took over their Elway Mills building in the community of Porcupine and held it for 34 days because of this. And on the third or fourth day, maybe it was day seven, that's all it's been one. There's so much happening between now and then. They arrested our brother, Chinupa, as he was going to get supplies on false charges and they held him in jail in Pine Ridge as a political prisoner for 27 days or something. And every day they'd go to him and say, hey, just call up the elders and tell them to leave and we'll let you out. And he said, no. This is what's going on there.
So when you say they, you mean the people who are...
The Indian
police. The IRA child governor. So paid for with your tax dollars, no less.
So they're the ones with all the casinos?
They're the ones with the casinos. If not least to white people who run the casinos. Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Dave Archambault, IRA government. How many of you gave to Standing Rock?
Yeah, different.
To Dave Archambault. Ouch. Because the grassroots people never saw it. They're never gonna see it.
And the pipeline is built. Sorry, I gotta go, but thanks, Anna.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. So millions of dollars, at least $6 million went to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And not a dollar. Though, Dave, his liquor store gas station, is, I heard, getting some nice renovations. Now, I'm going to go even deeper. Why wasn't Strongheart Chantetinza at Standing Rock? We worked for 3 days. The elders asked Chinupa and some of the guys to go up for 3 days, and they did. And when they got there, the cops that were around, they searched them and made them disarm.
Explain the grammar again. Who searched who and made them disarm?
Strongheart searched the cops and made them disarm when they came into camp. That is indigenous jurisdiction. But it's scary to those of you who like peace. Because what if the cops retaliate? Well, these natives are being really militant. They not even have weapons. Oh my God.
Well, how did the independent Lakota, were they controlling the land such that the cops had to be searched when they stepped on the tribe?
It's okay. This is what people don't understand. We're trying to. All right. Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. This is Black Feet Nation. And Pine Ridge. Who owns the land? Is it the tribal government that owns the land?
Well, didn't they cut, or they're trying to do more of this, but didn't they cut it up and put it in the hands of individual Native Americans to try to buy it off from them?
All right, so let's slow down. Everybody take a deep breath, please. Please take a deep breath. I want to ask you for a minute, in that deep breath, to think about the land that's right outside this church, and under this church, and there's trees, and there's animals, maybe there's an owl outside right now, there's squirrels, and ground squirrels, chipmunks, bugs, clouds, wind. The language of the Lenape people is still spoken by those beings. You get that? The language of the Lenape people is spoken by the wind out there, and the bugs, and the squirrels, and all those living beings out there. Do tribal governments own the land? No. The grassroots people who still speak the language, who still have the culture, it is theirs to own or caretake or whatever word you want to use. And it always will be. Not these quasi-sovereign corporate U.S. programs. that's why Chontay Tinta can go say, you're on our land, on treaty land, and just on our land, because we have a natural inherent right that's never been surrendered, to have our land. And you're on it, so if you want to be in our space with our people, we're going to disarm you. And you can come in here, and if you're not going to disarm, you're going to stay out there. And we're going to stop you if you come in. That is indigenous jurisdiction. That's real indigenous jurisdiction. That's real indigenous nationality. But very few people can do that. These groups cannot. The tribes cannot and will not, because they're selling away this, the inherent rights, or trying to, of the indigenous peoples for government money. And I'll show you how that works. The Law and Order Act of 2010, I believe. The U.S. is like, hey. Wow, domestic violence is really bad, isn't it? Man, domestic violence on the in Indian country is really tough. We need more enforcement, right? We need to give tribal governments a way to punish the people who are doing this domestic violence. Do you agree? Who doesn't agree with that?
I don't trust you.
Yeah,
here. Trust them. Here's $45 million, Pine Ridge, for law enforcement to stop domestic violence. You want it? Well, okay. Then give me your jurisdiction so that federal agents can come on the res and state agents can come on the res to stop these bad people. So we'll give you the $45 million if you just surrender a little bit of your sovereignty to us. That's how it works. So think about it. Dave Archambeau and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe filed a permit with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, a permit to build a camp on their own land. What? Now, y'all are probably like, when you saw that, you're probably like, of course, that's what people do. They file permits to do things. From an indigenous philosophy perspective, can you imagine? You just asked the federal government to use your own land. And not only that, but if you know anything about permits, you know they're just going to yank it whenever they want. And that's exactly what they did, didn't they? That's exactly what they did. The state of Montana and the federal government, you better get off, all you protesters, you better get off the land. Because the permit is being... You want to have that one? Okay. The permit, it's no good anymore. We're gonna cancel your permit. Yeah.
I was confused about whether this was native land or not, because like in the news, it said it was and then it wasn't. Is this because the permits were taken away or something?
It's all native land, folks.
Okay, but from the United States point of view.
It doesn't matter. Okay. But see, this is what you got to start thinking a different way. And I'm not trying to be mean.
I'm just trying to.
We have to start thinking a different way. It's all indigenous land. Now, for the Lakota, for the Ocheti Chacon, they never surrendered nation status. They never surrendered their sovereign jurisdiction or their innate rights over their territory. And in fact, the 1868 treaty, which maybe you heard about at Brown Standing Rock, the 1868 treaty was fraudulent from the moment of its signing, because the U.S. government rolled wagons of whiskey up and got all the signers drunk to put their mark on the 1868 treaty. And there's a U.S. federal document that actually describes that one of our people has seen in the state of Montana's Bureau of Geology or whatever.
Montana or South Dakota?
South Dakota. Did I say Montana? I meant to say South Dakota. So, it's all in Vietnam. But these, remember, I just did that with you. They're surrendering this, and people out here, like yourselves, you don't know this story. Maybe you know a little bit of this story, but you don't know this story.
What are percentages? So that the indigenous people, how much is the percentage of the whole? Okay.
That's a great question. I love how you worded that question. Because for these people, we can debate this, but for the real indigenous people that are in this circle, the ones out here who don't hold the language and don't think like Indians anymore, they'll call them white. You've heard the word apple? Like, they don't consider them to be indigenous anymore. So I actually love the way you worded that. On Pine Ridge, there's about 48,000 people on Pine Ridge. About half are still traditional grassroots people. Not all of them have fluent language, but there's a lot of language there. On the Blackfeet Nation, who we've been working with, there's a lot less. On some reservations, it's none. I'm not saying there's not individuals that are trying to be here and do something, but because of our genocidal Holocaust waves, that's what's been created. So Pine Ridge and the Dene Res are two of the strongholds of that traditional indigenous thought, philosophy, and existence on Turtle Island. Many other reses are in much worse shape, like the Blackfeet Nation. That's why giving these resources back, like we just talked about, is so essential right now.
So Bedrock is in the same place as Pine Ridge, as
yes.
Far as percentages?
Standing Rock is probably a little less. The most traditional reses within the nine Lakota reses, Pine Ridge, Standing Rock, Rosebud, and Cheyenne River are the four strongholds. Pine Ridge being the first, maybe Standing Rock the second, and Rosebud third, and Cheyenne River.